Hi again, it's John Williams, and Terry Savage joins us, the financial advisor. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Terry, welcome back. How are you?
Good to be back with you and listening to the news of stock market history. Remember, we're in September.
What happens in September?
Well, that's interesting. It depends on the statistics you use. In living memory, mine doesn't go quite back to post-World War II, but as Steve pointed out in the news, it's been a terrible month for the stock market, with an average decline of a little over 0.5% since 1945. And so far, the Dow is down 2%. And I was thinking about this earlier today. I was looking up the history. Actually, if you go back to 1928, the average loss in September is 1%. So that's been used to make the headlines and explain why the stock market, you know, we had a down week last week every day, struggling back. However, I dug up one other little statistic. This is true about the average terrible month of September, except when the S&P is up at least 13% in the first 6 months of the year. Don't ask me who sorted this out, but someone did. And if the market is up in the first 6 months of the year, and by the way, this September we were up over 14%, then in September, historically, there's a gain of 1.4%. So the message is, if you want to be a trader and you want to be cute, you can come up with all these statistics, or you can cover yourself in fear. There'll be a decline sometime. There'll be a correction sometime. There's a lot of money out there chasing stocks, waiting to buy any correction. And so if you are like most of our listeners, and you have a portfolio that's meant to tide you through retirement, your choice is not, is it up this month or is September bad? But what percentage of my assets should be in stocks, because I have a long time horizon. I want to fight off inflation. And over the long run, stocks always have beaten inflation.
You started to sound a little like one of those baseball analysts that will say,
yes,
that's the first time a left-hander in the leadoff spot got two singles in a row after three outs of the fourth, or something like that.
But it's been making headlines about how to be scared of September, except after a good year, it actually turns out to be September is a good month. So let's just wait. 2 weeks from now, we can talk and see how it worked out.
A text has just poured in. Please ask Terry Savage what she thinks about buying gold or silver coins.
Oh, you're asking the wrong person. I am a true believer in having a small percentage of your portfolio in gold. Now, I see it's down about $14, $15 today, below $1,800 an ounce. The reason I believe that is because I grew up in the financial markets in the 70s when inflation really took hold. And the one thing that kept pace with inflation, and it was not stocks for that decade. The decade between 72 and 82 is absolutely flat for the stock market on average. We never broke above the highs of 72 until 1982. But what did perform well as a hedge against inflation was gold. Now, today, there people are saying, well, look at all the signs of inflation. I mean, we're seeing it less in consumer prices this month, but last month. Why isn't gold taking off? I don't know, but I would never be without a small percentage either in dividend-paying gold stocks or an ETF or a mutual fund. And gold coins, I mean, that's a nice thing, but when the moment comes where you have to, I used to say this, I have to rethink it now, where you would exchange a gold coin for a loaf of bread, I mean, we have a different kind of a problem in our society. So if you want to give graduation presents or holiday presents, a gold coin, I have nothing against that, but they're heavy. You have to store them in your safe deposit box, and they do fluctuate with the price of gold unless they're special value collector's coins that might at some point have some extra value.
Lots of phone calls and text messages for you, Terry. Anything
okay.
Anything else you want to lay out there before we pick some of
no,
them up?
No, let's take the calls.
Okay, fair enough. Then let's start with Carol. How can we help you, Carol? You're on WGN.
Hi, thanks, John and Terry, for taking my call. I listen to Terry on your show every Wednesday and sometimes with Steve Bertrand. And one thing I've never heard her mention, and maybe she has and I missed it, is investing in U.S. savings I-bonds. Interest rate is 3.54.
Okay, for many years, first of all, savings bonds, I-bonds, have a floor rate, and then they have an adjustment rate based on inflation. Recently, that adjustment rate has popped up, even though the floor is still very low. I just kind of got away from even thinking about I bonds or double E bonds because the rates, the guaranteed minimum rates, were so low. So I have no recommendation. It's probably time for me to revisit it now that the every 6 month adjustment rate has picked itself up.
Yeah, because the EE rates are very low. It's like 0.01.
Yeah. Exactly.
But the I bonds are 3.54. And,
but the guaranteed floor, that's the 6 month adjustment added to the guaranteed floor. I haven't even looked up the I bond guaranteed floor rate in a while. As I said, I probably should look at it. You never get something for nothing. So you have to look at the long history. But since I think rates are rising, let me give it some thought. It's probably a good idea for a column.
Yeah,
thanks for bringing it up.
Thanks for the phone call. So is it sort of like a variable rate thing where it adjusts?
It is. If you go, anybody who wants to learn more about this is where I would go right now. I was just about to do that to look up, is treasurydirect.gov. And I'll probably during the next break do that. And so you can look up the current rates of I bonds or all your savings bonds that you've owned before. The general advice on savings bonds is don't sell the ones from 30 years ago because they're still paying interest and the I bonds have a very high base floor. But for the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years, you wouldn't buy I bonds because they had a next to zero base floor and we had no inflation, so there was no adjustment. So here, interest rates for Series I. I'm going to research that right now and see if I can get it for you. But I'll do that during the break. Let's take another call.
This is Linda. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because I am planning on starting to take Social Security January 1st, and I heard there might be like a 5% jump. But I'm wondering, should I take it December 1st so I get that 5% jump, or do I automatically get it January 1st anyway?
When do you turn officially your full retirement age?
I think it's 66 in 4 months, so I'm going to be short of that. But
Don't do that.
My husband's not going to take his for a while. But
that's not the point.
Because I lost my job a year ago.
How many months short are you going to be?
I turn 65 next week.
And do you think you can't possibly find something to do? It is going to make a huge difference. First of all, you're going to be docked some on the, if you do get some work, you're going to have a penalty on the Social Security benefits you do take. But more important, if you can possibly figure out a way to earn something for the next year and a half, whatever it is, not even that month, till you get to be full retirement age, you're going to get a significantly higher base payment. And that's what all future inflation adjustments will be based upon.
I'll bet she knows that. So why are you in such a rush, Linda? Why can't you wait a year and a half or two?
Well, we've been living on half a salary. When I lost my job, we lost like half our income. So we've been doing that for a year and a half. So it's just I've looked at everything. I just think this is the smart move for us. My husband's going to keep working part-time. So it's just what we decided to do. But my question is, would I get that bump?
You're not going to
get like 8% a year.
Can I just please go back and try and tell you that's not the smart thing to do? Look, the latest unemployment report shows that there are 11 million jobs going begging.
Yeah, I
and
know.
You know I what your unemployment.
I have a mother who has got dementia.
She's desperate for the cash.
All right.
Desperate for the cash.
The answer is I do not know. I don't want to ill-advise you. I do not know whether it's going to make a difference. You just need to complete full months to get what you're going to get in terms of early retirement benefits. I do not know what the cutoff date is for getting the bump up, the cost of living increase, whether it's better if you take it now and have it reduced more because you missed a month of not taking it, or whether you wait. I would call Social Security, or I would go to maximizemysocialsecurity.com and post that question, because you can put your numbers in. It's cost $40, but surely going to be worth it to you. And post that question there, and they will give you your specific numbers based on your earnings. It's safe and secure, and it's a great website, MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com.
Maximize your or my?
My.
Maximize my social. What's the website now? I'll get it right. Maximize my.
MySocialSecurity.com.
But it's a good question. What age do you have to be at to have full Social Security retirement benefits?
Well, it depends on when you were born. Okay, so because it's gradually moving up it'll be 67 pretty soon. But
so it's not more than 2 years for her. And what she's saying is she just doesn't want to go 2 years without a monthly check, which might be substantial for some families.
It's let's just say that she works for a long time, and maybe her Social Security, I'm just going to make a guess. Let's say it's $2,000 a month. Okay, that's $500 a week. That's $100 a day. And what I'm saying this, and what I'm saying to someone is, if you could figure out a way, I don't care if you are driving for Uber Eats or you, I mean, that's not probably what this woman wants to do, but figure out, especially since right now there's a huge gap for smart, intelligent people who are not millennials, who are going to run and jump at the next vacation trip or leave for another job tomorrow afternoon. I'm telling you that if this woman would cold call businesses nearby and say, I work for XC 2 years as a something, I've got a good work ethic, I could be a great office manager, I only want to work for 2 more years, here's what I need to make. I need to make $600 a week, something like that to offset. This would be worth every extra effort, because the impact over the next 30 years of her life is going to be huge from having a lower base pay on which future adjustments of COLAs are made.
Did you do any other noodling there, Terry?
I did. Thanks for coming back to me on that. This is for Carol, who wanted to know about I-bonds. And I realized I hadn't looked at the base rates and the inflation rates for a while. But I-bond interest has a fixed base rate for the life of the bond. And the current fixed basis rate is zero. Now, it can never be negative, but it is zero. And every May and November, although your bond might not adjust on those dates, depends on when you bought it, the rate changes based on the consumer price index, including food, et cetera, et cetera. So currently, for this 6 months, they are yielding an average, they're yielding 3.54%. But here's the problem. Right now, I-bonds are a pure speculation on the uptrend in inflation. And so we've had a couple of months here where we've had some nice big leaps in inflation. But that's all it is. Now, you may say, well, I'll buy it now, and then if inflation goes away, I'll get rid of it. If you don't hold your I-bond for 5 years, then you lose the last 3 months of interest, which makes a big dent. As I said there, you don't get something for nothing anywhere. But the appeal right now is the current base rate. But again, they adjust that every 6 months. So even though inflation is higher now, if it were to drop in the coming 6 months, I don't know why it would, but because we're seeing inflation everywhere. But if you think of your Jay Powell and you think inflation will drop, then the next 6 months you could be earning less. But the point is, you have to hang on to them for 5 years. They're an interesting speculation on continuing inflation right now. And I hadn't paid attention to them, but Carol made a good point. To look at.
That's fueling the increase in Social Security payments too, right?
Well, and we know that, for instance, we know that the increase for the next COLA is likely to be well over 5%, maybe even 6%.
And then, so when does that kick in? When do you get the COLA on Social Security?
It'll be announced in the next month or two. And I believe it will kick in January.
January. Okay. So 12:38. Back to your phone calls, 312-981-7200. Kim, you're on WGN. How can we help you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was a teacher, and I just got my first pension check. And the state of Illinois says that teachers can only take one-third of any Social Security that is due them because of double dipping, and I don't know why else. Anyway, and so I think that my ex-husband's Social Security will be more than what mine was. Is there anything I should be doing?
Yeah, here's what I've done. Social Security, everybody's making, the huge baby boomer generation now is making decisions, and people are far more aware. Yeah, I think it's some huge number. A third of the people take Social Security when they're 62 and first eligible, which is a horrendous mistake, but if you need it, you need it. But now there are some very complex situations with spousal Social Security. You can claim on your spouse if he's claiming and you were married 10 years and not remarried. But in order to do the comparisons, especially given this this adjustment they make, I am going to send you again to this wonderful website. Lawrence Kotlikoff created it. He's written the book on Social Security, Get What's Yours. And the Social Security, the website is MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. You pay $40. They look at all the intricacies of the decisions you have to make. And then you get to see the specific choices. I've decided not to opine because what if I miss something? I'm not the expert on these trade-offs, but they are.
Okay. Yeah, because I never hear anything about teachers' pensions and the discount or, you know, the double dipping, so we only get one-third of Social Security that would be due to us. And I know that not every state does that, but that Illinois is one of them.
But you,
I hear about that all the time as teachers now get set to retire and they go, wait, what? I mean, sort of everybody kind of knew it, but when you see it in the numbers, yeah, you go, excuse me?
But did you pay into
you know,
Social
I paid
Security?
In, I should have, but did you that's pay the way the law reads.
Did you pay into Social Security all along, Kim?
No, you don't when you're
right,
a teacher.
Right.
But I worked in the real world for about 14 years. But my ex-husband, he worked in the real world for about 36 years.
Okay. So let's just repeat that number or that site, MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. Terry says it's a good $40 investment. Type in your information. They'll tell you how to maximize your Social Security. I want to just good luck to you on that. And here's a couple of other messages for you, Terry. I've got a question. I'd like to invest in a fund for my new grandson long term. What would be the best route? A college fund, a Roth account, something else I could make monthly deposits in?
No, you can't have a Roth account for baby because you can only open a Roth with income from work. But you are asking the right time because you can open a 529 college savings plan with you as custodian for your grandson. And if you live in Illinois, brightstart.com is the Illinois 529 plan. Just reading, I forget what new rating system, but it made the dean's list for low cost and good performance and good investment choices. So brightstart.com is the Illinois 529 savings plan. The money can be used for college in any state, and you can open it up as custodian. And, you know, you may start with $1,000 if you want to do that for the birth gift, and then whatever you can put in on it, they'll do an automatic deduction of $25 a month or whatever. And you'll put it in the most aggressive plan because it's an infant and you're going to invest for the long run. If America's here, and your grandchild's going to college, there'll be a nice sum tax-free at college.
My 91-year-old mother just sold her house. She does not need the money to live on. What might be a place for her to put it where she can gain access to it if needs be, but earn more interest than a savings account?
This is the $64 trillion question of the day. I always respond by saying, well, how much can she afford to lose? Look, folks, the deck is stacked against savers right now, and it has been for the last few years. As the Fed has kept interest rates, acknowledges this and says it artificially low, so the government can print a lot of money and not pay a lot of interest when it borrows the money, so it can do all these things. So interest rates are very low. And the choice is, how will you feel if you say, well, you know, I can find a dividend yield of 2% in a bunch of stocks or an equity income fund in the stock market, and I put my $100,000 in there, and I'll feel very good that I'm getting 2.5% on the portfolio, as opposed to 0.22% in your money market account at the bank. My question is, and I've seen this and I know the sinking feeling, what happens when, and there will be a stock market correction of at least 10%, or maybe a bear market of 20%, or the worst bear markets have been down 48%, and I've seen a few of those. So when you look at your statement and your 100,000 is reduced to, a 10% correction, maybe 91,000, or maybe 78,000, or God forbid you wake up one morning and the market's crashed. And I don't know why it would, but it has done that before. And your 100,000 is down to 70,000. That can happen. And I always say the time to figure out whether you're going to have a heart attack over that is before you search for an extra 2% yield over what a money market account is paying these days. Now, the fact is banks are taking advantage of savers. They don't need the money. They're not calling you and saying, hey, we'll give you a little bit more interest. You don't see those ads in the papers anymore. I'll give you another website, and it's Max My Interest, not Maximize My Social Security, but Max My Interest. And if you have over $100,000, you can go there and they will move your savings around in your own accounts in online banks where they might pay about another 0.25% in interest. But really, with your mother being 91, what we're talking about is having enough money for her to be cared for the rest of her life. And then when it becomes your money, at some point it will, whatever's left over, you make a different decision based on your risk tolerance. You don't want your mother going, oh my God, what happened to my money?
Well, so here's my answer. Tell me what you think about it. She's 91, so her time horizon is 10 years maybe, and it's not a play even as much as you want to put it in some index fund. Why don't you just put it in the savings account, take zero interest? That's okay. They said she has enough to live on, and you're not in for the long run anyway. So just save the money and don't worry about its earning potential.
Or as it famously said about chicken money, I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as I am about the return of my money. So don't project your emotions and your long-term time horizon on your mother, who's probably sharp enough at 81, or 91, I should say, to look at her statement and say, oh, isn't that nice, dear? Now I have $150,000 in it. When I die, you're going to get that.
Yeah,
but in the meantime, I want home health care. I want this or that. And she can have it. It's her money. She earned it.
TerrySavage.com. Visit TerrySavage.com and listen for her here next Wednesday. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, John.
It's always a pleasure to visit with her. You're here with Steve Bertrand on WGN Radio on Chicago's Afternoon News 2. And now we hear Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. An aviation maintenance school is opening in Chicago aimed at helping ease a looming shortage of aviation workers. Cranes reports the Aviation Institute of Maintenance is opening its school in a former warehouse in McKinley Park on the southwest side. The institute operates 13 aviation schools across the country. Classes will begin later this month with about 40 students. Aviation Institute of Maintenance says it'll be able to train 200 students each year. The company is based in Virginia, but is a major partner of AAR, a suburban-based aircraft maintenance and parts provider. A shortage of workers is adding to supply chain snags at Caterpillar. The company's CEO says CAT is having difficulties getting needed materials from suppliers because those suppliers don't have enough workers. A global chip shortage is also impacting operations at Caterpillar. The rapid return of economic activity after a year of pandemic shutdowns has left many businesses short-staffed, and he says that's slowing down and clogging up supply chains. CAT-operated factories have seen isolated labor shortages, but nothing significant. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Stepping on a scale can be a disturbing thing to do these days. A lot of us picked up the quarantine 15, maybe a little bit more than that. The current concern today, though, is our children, who were already piling on the pounds before the pandemic.
And that has accelerated dramatically, especially in the age group of kids 5 to 11 years old.
Laura Riley, the business of food reporter for The Washington Post. I expected with schools and restaurants closed that there'd be more home cooking, which should be healthier than eating out, right?
Unfortunately, it looks like the foods that we eat at home in the past 18 months are not as healthy as the foods that kids eat at school.
And with parents trying to work from home and also trying to monitor their kids doing schoolwork online, parental fatigue became a food factor.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another thing to consider. Parents who are just like, I can't deal with one more thing. You know, I'm going to let them eat whatever they want to eat.
Then there are the devices our kids are watching.
Parents are even less able now because of screens of all sizes to monitor what's being marketed to their kids.
So the end result, based on a California study, is obesity. Before the pandemic, about 36% of 5 to 11-year-olds were considered overweight or obese. That increased to 46%.
But the big question is, how do we reverse that? it's really hard. You know, everyone says you really can't put kids on a diet because it creates a lot of bad relationships with food or adversarial relationships with food and poor body self-image.
And Laura Riley of the Washington Post says there's growing evidence that much of the blame goes to highly processed foods, which are harder to digest.
And this is anything from baked goods to, you know, pizza rolls or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, parents, getting that turned around. Chicago Board of Trade, double-digit gains today. Corn is up 12 cents. Beans are right now up 11 cents, and wheat is trading about 12 cents higher. From the farm to your belly, it's another triple play today. National Cheese Toast Day, National Linguini Day, and National Double Cheeseburger Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
A lot of folks fix up their Airbnbs in New Buffalo, Michigan. Not so fast, right, Amy Guth?
That's right. So there's potentially going to be a ban on Airbnbs. It's going to a vote tomorrow night. So the current mayor kind of ran on this platform, a little bit fed up of short-term rentals. And part of the argument is about noise. If you have like an influx of people coming in and out of your neighborhood, part of it is waste. You know, these are houses that are built usually for like a family of four. And if you've got, say, six or eight adults staying in them, not only do you have a lot of cars probably parked out front, you might be also generating more waste and more recycling, so, and more water use and other, you know, energy on the grid, things like that. So it's going to a vote with the Planning Commission in New Buffalo tomorrow. Now, a lot of homeowners are pushing back against this, saying, hey, this is a big source of income, or some that have even said, hey, I you know, bought this house with this intention of, you know, using it for this purpose. So earlier today, I talked with Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin, who's been following this story really carefully. And, you know, a lot is going to depend on tomorrow night. He told me that this could really go a lot of different ways. And it might be that, okay, it's, you have to zone it as a commercial property and get a license to do that. You know, it might not just be, okay, it's over. There might be some nuances to it, but, you know, such a popular, you know, a lot of people have getaway houses in New Buffalo. A lot of people have second homes there. A lot of people rent Airbnbs and Verbos there to get away for the weekend, things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'll be watching that really closely.
Yeah, no kidding. A lot of money from Chicago gets spent there because of those.
Yeah.
Walmart is testing self-driving cars.
They are. And so they're doing a partnership with Ford Motors and Argo AI. And they're testing this first in Miami, D.C. and Austin with the intention of whatever they learn from that, they will eventually roll out to the rest of us. They're going to test this for delivery. We've seen something similar with Domino's. They've rolled out these kind of self-driving autonomous vehicles that when your pizza arrives, you go out and you punch in a code and that door opens and you get out your pizza. So I'm sure it'll be something similar, these kind of driverless vehicles that will be delivering things from Walmart. You know, a part of their strategy that they talked about earlier in the year was such a big part of that was online grocery orders. That's such a huge part of their business strategy, their membership program that's sort of like to rival Amazon Prime. The two of them, Amazon and Walmart, are really kind of neck and neck and always kind of trying to outdo each other. And this is the latest move from Walmart.
So no human being would be in this vehicle that brings your groceries to you?
Yep, that's exactly right. It would just be some sort of self-driving vehicle that would bring your groceries and notify you when they're there, and you'd hop out and get them. I imagine it would probably also include some kind of PIN code that you would enter, just like with Domino's, so that you're not just getting all the groceries out of the car, but just this one compartment of them that you've ordered.
Talk to me about SpaceX news.
Yeah, so I think all of the, you know, everything that's happening right now in all of the space news is so very interesting, but this is a kind of a big step in all of it. And that's, weather permitting, later tonight, sometime between 7 p.m. and midnight our time, so 8 p.m. and 1 a.m. Central, again, that's weather permitting, there will be a SpaceX launch. It's called Inspiration 4, and on board of that will be four people, none of whom are professional astronauts. They will be going into space for 3 days. So this is kind of a big moment in kind of this idea of space tourism, of what we can accomplish there, who would do it. This crew is interesting. Jared Isaacman, he's the billionaire founder of a payment processing company called Shift4. He's personally financing the entire mission. With him, he's bringing three others, one of whom is a former patient, now clinician at St. Jude's Hospital. So part of this, he's chipped in $100 million as a $200 million fundraising initiative for St. Jude in hopes that part of this mission will raise the other 100,000 by people kind of inspired by what they're doing.
Wow.
But nonetheless, they're going to be in space for 3 days. So, you know, NASA has really pulled back from civilians in space ever since Kristen McAuliffe and the Challenger disaster in 1986. So this is a big, kind of a big moment for space launch, space tourism, and just kind of what's possible.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.